This is an audiobook presentation of Public Enemy Zero by Andrew Main. Public Enemy Zero is available for only $1 at the Amazon Kindle store or via the Kindle app on all major tablets and smartphones, including iPads, iPhones, Blackberries, Windows 7, and Android. It's also available on the Barnes & Noble Nook store and Apple's iBooks. Or you can get a complete, uninterrupted copy of this audiobook at andrewmain.com/books. Chapter 48. Mitchell passed the inlet that led toward the part of downtown where he'd made his escape. Police and news helicopters flew around looking for a naked Mitchell hiding out somewhere around town. The underwater propulsion device had made its escape a practical impossibility to anyone watching. A strong scuba diver would be able to swim 1 mile in an hour at most with no current. He'd cover that distance in 20 minutes, giving him an hour head start from the most optimistic position of where it could be. That was, of course, assuming people were thinking logically. Mitchell had little reason to think that was the case. Mitchell kept the boat going south on the Intracoastal and focusing on what he needed to do next. He set the scanner on the dashboard and turned the volume all the way up so he could hear it over the engine noise. As a precaution, he laid out his dive gear in the rear seats, if he needed to, and checked the charge on the underwater propulsion device. It still had a half a charge left. That was more than enough to take him up to shore or pretty far down a side canal. Knowing he had some kind of backup escape cleared his head and made it easier to think. The problem he had earlier was that nobody took him seriously. He'd hoped the unfortunate incident at the bridge was enough of a wake-up call. To find out what the reaction was, Mitchell turned on the boat's stereo and tuned it into a news channel. He still kept one ear on the scanner, periodically turning it to make sure that he wasn't about to be surrounded. Mitchell hadn't realized the unintended consequence, stripping down to his underwear head on people's perceptions. The bite marks and scratches hurt like hell when he thought about them. But he'd been too focused on moving, stopping at a look at himself. When the public saw, they became more sympathetic. He gave them an image of Mitchell as a wounded man, trying to avoid getting hurt. When the FBI negotiator attacked him, even people defending how law enforcement agencies were handling the case found it hard to defend what took place. A popular discussion on several of the news stations was what should Mitchell do next. According to reports, his Mad Mitch FM Twitter handle was flooded with people decrying what happened and offering advice. One suggestion repeated by a reporter made a lot of sense. At Mad Mitch FM, get a fucking lawyer on these assholes. He needed a third party to negotiate for his surrender. Someone who could verify that the authorities were living up to their word. He needed the advice of someone who could help him. Not just find out what was wrong with him, but make sure he didn't spend the rest of his life in prison. Mitchell realized that if he had surrendered that morning and hadn't been attacked, and the magical armored truck didn't put him in a riot in the middle of downtown, he probably would have walked right into their hands without any legal protection. While he bargained for his life, they would have conned him into agreeing to spend the rest of it in prison. For sure, he'd done some criminal things. Nothing he should go to jail for. At least in his mind, as far as he was concerned, guilty feelings or not, he was only trying to survive. Mitchell began to get angry at the thought that he might actually have to go to prison for what happened. His hand pushed the throttle forward as he fumed. When he realized he was making a wake big enough to get stopped by the Marine Patrol, he slowed down. The last thing he needed was to start a boat chase over a no-wake zone ticket. When he got the chance to make a phone call, he tried to contact a lawyer. Bigger loudmouth, the better. He wanted some kind of O.J. Simpson-level dream team. If he got surrounded or stopped before then, that would be his one request. He wanted someone else to deal with the unctuous negotiators. He began to form a legal strategy in his mind. Of course, he was sure the lawyers would have better ideas. It just made him feel better to have a plan. Mitchell was killed before he got to the lawyer. There was going to be no brilliant defense, no pardon, and no cure. Chapter 49. A half hour later, Mitchell was lost in thought, thinking of his legal defense, when the police scanner inexplicably flew off the console. At first he thought it was from a wave he just drove through. When he leaned over to pick it up, he saw the bullet hole. Instant later, he felt something graze his right shoulder. Fuck! He screamed as he ducked behind the console. He put his hand on his shoulder and felt where the bullet had almost gone through his arm. It burned like hell, but there was no blood. The second bullet sounded like it was coming from one of the islands to his left up ahead. He reached a part of the intracoastal where it was mostly mangroves on either side. A perfect place for an ambush. He desperately wanted to pop his head up and look, but he knew that's what the sniper was waiting for. Mitch reached his hand up and slowed the boat so he wouldn't overtake the sniper's position and leave himself vulnerable in the open cockpit. He had to go past that point sooner or later, otherwise the shooter would just work his way through the brush to a better position. Why was he being shot at? Didn't the FBI warn you before they did stuff like that? Didn't make any sense to him. Mitchell looked around the boat for anything he could use to protect himself. He could hide in the cabin, but that would mean leaving the boat adrift. Sooner or later, he would hit the shoreline and the shooter could just hop aboard and finish him. Somewhere in the distance, Mitchell heard the sound of a helicopter. He had the urge to wave them down, but knew that outcome probably wasn't going to be a good one either. He looked at the console above his head. He tried to navigate the boat without looking. He looked at the tree line in back of him. He could gauge where the middle of the waterway was. It would still leave him open when he passed the sniper's position. Mitch decided to hell with it. He'd aim the boat down the middle as best he could, throw the throttle forward, and duck down into the cabin. It was a cowardly way to confront the crisis, but he didn't have any other options. Mitchell opened up the cabin door and got an inspiration when he saw the mirror over the small sink. Climbed inside and ripped it off the wall. Climbed up to the bed that was directly under the bow hatch and carefully lifted the mirror. He looked at the trees where he thought the shot came from. He saw something move, and then the mirror shattered, followed by the sound of a loud bang. The hatch slammed shut as broken pieces of plastic fell on him. "Asshole!" shouted Mitch. The boat was still drifting forward. He needed to do something fast. Mitch searched the cabin for anything. Found an emergency transponder in a drawer and threw it aside. He opened another drawer and dumped it out onto the bed. There were two flare guns like the ones he'd boosted from the super center the night before. Mitch grabbed them both and climbed back out to the cockpit. He pulled the safety off one and gripped it in his right hand. He only had a vague idea where the shooter was, so the most he could hope for was a distraction. He pulled the cabin door wide open so it would act as a shield. Mad Mitch quickly reached his hand up and fired. The flare shot across the bow, trailed by a plume of smoke. Mitch pushed the throttle halfway forward and ducked into the cabin. He could see part of the shoreline as the boat moved between where the sniper was hidden. From inside the cabin, he shot the other flare in the general direction of the shooter. He climbed out of the smoke-filled cabin and ducked under the console to try and steer the boat away from the sides of the waterway. The boat became more difficult to control the faster it went. Mitch decided to push the throttle all the way forward and get back behind the wheel. He made an effort to keep the boat moving erratically until he was out of range. Mitch rounded the bend and put the small peninsula between himself and the shooter. He had no idea if there were other snipers lying in wait for him. He decided at this point it was better to keep the boat going full throttle. He also had no idea who was shooting at him. He'd prefer a chase from Marine Patrol than getting shot at by hidden snipers. He was half tempted to get on an open channel and ask why people were shooting at him. He decided to wait until he knew his position was completely compromised. For all he knew, it was the government trying to take him out. The sooner he got to a more populated area, the safer he would feel. Safe as long as people kept their distance. Mitch had the throttle fully open and was flying down the waterway. The boat would hit small waves and glide through the air. He passed several fishing boats, sending them into the trees. People shouted curses back at them. In 10 minutes, he would pass from the undeveloped section of the waterway to a more residential area. If he slowed down there, he might be able to make it by at a more reasonable speed. His hope now was to be able to slip up close to a marina or a housing complex, steal some Wi-Fi to make a Skype call on his iPod he'd stolen. Mitchell heard the sound of a boat getting closer behind him. He turned around and froze for a moment when he realized it wasn't a boat. It was a black helicopter flying just a few feet above the water, gaining on his stern. Fucking black helicopters? A man leaned out the side with a large rifle. Mitch ducked down and jerked the wheel to the left, sending the boat in a tight circle, bringing it to the opposite side of the helicopter as the shooter. The helicopter made a tight turn, too. Mitch tried to bring the boat underneath the helicopter to stay out of the shooter's range. The pilot pulled the helicopter off to the side in a movement Mitch couldn't replicate with the boat and brought the shooter in direct line of sight with Mitchell. Mitch turned the wheel to the right, bringing the left side several feet higher as the boat turned into another circle. He was running out of options. The helicopter could outmaneuver him and go twice as fast. He looked ahead and saw a narrow channel between an island and the ocean side of the Intracoastal. Mitch aimed the boat for there while swerving back and forth. The top of the seat next to him erupted in padding as another shot rang out. The boat slid under a small canopy of trees. Mitch pulled the throttle back. He could see the helicopter fly overhead and come to a hover. Mitchell could jump from the boat and try to make it through the thick vegetation and find a place to hide, but for how long? He had little doubt a sniper would be able to find him there. He needed some way of minimizing the helicopter's advantage. Mitch opened up the lockers in the stern to look for something he could use. All he had was wetsuits and dive tanks. He opened up another locker and saw the dive belts. He wished he could start throwing them at the windshield. Maybe if he cracked it. Had Mitch had a better idea. He ran to the console and pushed the throttle forward, a hair, sending the boat out from under the canopy. Mr. Lewis and Mr. Travis watched as the boat drifted from under the cover of the trees. The cockpit was empty. That meant either Mitchell had jumped off to the island or was trying to wait things out inside the cabin. Mr. Travis looked at Mr. Lewis for instructions. Mr. Lewis set the rifle between the seats. He pulled on an oxygen mask, slung the tank over his shoulder, gave the valve a turn, and then pulled a 9mm pistol from a holster at his side. "Bring it down," he said through the mask. Mr. Travis brought the helicopter a few feet above the stern and matched speed with the boat as it glided along. Mr. Lewis hopped down from the passenger side door and landed in a crouch on the back of the boat. He kept his body away from the line of sight of the cabin. One of Mitchell's flares had already come close to burning the hair off the left side of his head. Wouldn't let him try that again. He hopped from the top of the stern engines into the main cockpit, his fingers prepared to squeeze as he shot anything that moved inside the cabin. He took a step closer and was beginning to make out the interior when everything went dark for a moment. Hands grabbed him and shoved him into the water just before he could understand what had happened. He looked up from the water as Mad Mitch hurled a dive tank from the locker at his head. It hit the gun and knocked it from his grasp. He turned to dive for it when Mitchell hurled another dive belt at his head. It hit so hard, he felt the urge to vomit. Mr. Travis had watched as Mitchell emerged from the locker in the stern and swung the weight belt at Mr. Lewis's head. To the man's credit, it seemed to only faze him and not knock him out. Mitchell used the distraction to throw him overboard. While Mad Mitch looked for more heavy objects to throw at Mr. Lewis as he tread water, Mr. Travis pulled a sidearm from his ankle holster. Mad Mitch turned around as Mr. Travis was sliding a window open on the pilot's side door. Mad Mitch looked down at his feet and opened another hatch. He reached in and pulled out a metal anchor. Mad Mitch began swinging it by the anchor line in huge circles. When it was at the top of its arc, he aimed it at the rotor and let go. Mr. Travis shouted, then pulled back on the stick to avoid losing the helicopter. He heard the sound of metal hitting the hull. From the stern of the boat, Mitchell looked up in shock. He thought he'd only hoped to hit the anchor against the window and crack the glass. When the pilot pulled back, he tilted up so the skid acted as a catch for the anchor. The anchor went through the gap between the skid and the hull and fell into the water. Mitch watched as the rope at his feet unspooled. The pilot pulled the helicopter into a hover when he thought he was at a safe distance from the anchor, oblivious to the fact that he'd just been hooked. Mr. Travis spotted Mr. Lewis floating in the water. He was waving furiously at him, pointing at the helicopter. Mr. Travis brought the helicopter down to pick him up. Mad Mitch didn't want to lose his chance to have the man in the water ruin his catch. He ran to the console and slammed the throttle forward. The boat raced away from the helicopter. Mr. Travis watched it try to get away out of the corner of his eye. He'd have plenty of time to catch up with him when he picked up Mr. Lewis. He turned to look at the water, and then noticed a line running from the boat just under the chopper. He felt something yank on his skids. "Oh, fuck!" he said as he realized the anchor had just grabbed his chopper like a grappling hook. He jerked the stick forward to avoid being pulled from the sky. Mad Mitch had the throttle wide open and was starting to catch air as he hit crests in the waves. The helicopter had to either match speed or run the risk of Mitchell pulling it into the water. It could come down on top of him for all he cared at that point. After 2 days of constant abuse, it felt good to be able to strike out in anger and not feel bad about it. He kept the boat headed south. He could see the north end of the next city coming into view. There was no way he was not going to attract attention with a helicopter tied to his stern. The advantage of that happening was that it would lead to a lot of questions that would be embarrassing for whomever was out to kill him. He was sure the guy that had jumped onto his boat and the pilot weren't just a couple of assholes with a helicopter and a rifle. Mr. Travis was in an awkward situation, trying to get over the boat and then gain altitude to try and snap the anchor cable. Physics weren't on his side. The helicopter had a lifting capacity of 900 pounds. The anchor rope had a tensile strength of 4,000 pounds. Gaining altitude only raised the back end of the powerboat a few inches and increased the chances of crashing into the water. He opened up the sliding window of his door and aimed the pistol out the window. Mad Mitch looked at the suicidal man, then turned the boat sharply to the right. The pilot had seconds to match course or get pulled down. Mr. Travis opted to match course. He also realized that shooting Mitchell wouldn't help him get his helicopter loose from the boat. If anything, it might make matters worse if the boat ran aground. He decided to try and wrap the rope around the boat. With any luck, it would get cut by the propellers. He brought the helicopter in a tight arc, bringing it alongside Mitchell in the driver's seat. Mad Mitch looked over and flipped him off. The pilot pushed the throttle forward and brought the helicopter just inches off the water. Mad Mitch looked back and saw the slack the helicopter pilot was building up. Mitchell had been water skiing enough times to know what the pilot was doing. Mad Mitch ran back and grabbed the end of the line near where it was tied off. He pulled the slack rope into the boat cockpit until it ran taut with his skid to Mad Mitch's hand. Mr. Travis brought the helicopter across the bow while hovering less than a foot above the water. He looked back to see if the rope went under the bow. Instead, he saw Mad Mitch holding on to the slack and flipping him off again. He was grinning at him. "Goddamn punk!" Furious, he pulled up the stick, yanking the rope from Mad Mitch's hands. Both he and Mad Mitch were so engaged in their back and forth that they failed to notice the Marine Patrol boat heading towards them or the Channel 11 news copter that was following. Dozens of people had called 911 about the helicopter and the powerboat that were fighting on the Intracoastal. The Channel 11 helicopter was heading south to get footage of the Park Square Mall when they saw the battle taking place. Emergency news coverage about Mitchell was interrupted by a special news bulletin about the helicopter and the speedboat. It took 10 minutes before news anchors watching the feed realized that the man driving the boat was the same person the FBI was dredging the bottom of the South Bay Bridge for. Police helicopters from two different jurisdictions and an FBI chopper were now in pursuit of Mad Mitch and his catch. The county sheriff's boat had also started on the intercept course. Coast Guard cutters were moving into positions along all ocean access points. Mr. Travis looked down at Mad Mitch and the growing armada surrounding them both. He knew that the tail numbers were already being run and coming up as bogus. Voices in his headset demanded that he identify himself. Part of him just wanted to ram the chopper right into the boat and kill them both. He was sure Mr. Lewis would be happy with that outcome. Unfortunately for Mr. Lewis and his employers, Mr. Travis didn't have a death wish. He would wait for the right moment and jump into the water. With the right commotion, he might be able to slip away. Mad Mitch looked at all the heat on him and decided there was no point in not making plans for when they finally forced him to stop. Mitchell took the handset for the VHF radio and shouted over the sound of the helicopter overhead. Chapter 50. Baylor was watching the unfolding drama of the helicopter hooked to Mitchell's boat with a sense of dread. Reporters were trying to track down the helicopter's owners. Quick search on the FAA website revealed that the numbers on the tail were fake. His phone rang with an unfamiliar number. Hello? It's Lewis. We have a problem. Please tell me that you have nothing to do with that helicopter. Where are you? Said Baylor. I got picked up out of the water by a fisherman. I'm going to fix the problem. I need to know if the package is expendable. Baylor looked at the news chopper footage of the helicopter hovering over the boat as it raced down the intracoastal. If the pilot made it away somehow, it wasn't likely he would get very far. Although Baylor's hire wouldn't point directly back to him, the man was going to be in a position where he was likely to tell them everything he knew, which included Mr. Lewis and the package that was left on the helicopter. The package is expendable. After that, we need to salt the earth. I mean, you need to.
I understand, said Mr. Lewis.
Mr. Travis was thinking about getting on his VHF radio and asking Marine Patrol why they hadn't stopped Mitchell's boat and cut him free. Maybe if he acted petulant enough, he could get away and find a place to bail out near a crowded area. He could hear his phone ring through the connection to his headset. He answered.
Mr. Travis, this is Mr. Lewis. It seems we have a problem.
God damn, we have a problem. I was just supposed to be a taxi.
He looked out his window as almost the entire South Florida nautical and aviation law enforcement fleet gathered around his helicopter and the boat below.
I left something on board in my bag that can probably help you. It's an incendiary device. I'll tell you how to activate it. When you drop it onto Robert's boat, it should cause a large enough fire to burn the rope. Once you do that, you can bail out into a safe place. I'll call and help you relocate.
Mitchell was in the middle of explaining the new conditions for his surrender when the sound of the helicopter behind him changed pitch. He looked over his shoulder and saw the helicopter heading straight at him. The spinning blades were at eye level and started to pass over the back of the stern. Mitch jerked the wheel to the right and threw himself to the floor. He felt a jet of air push him down as the rotors came inches away from the top of the deck. The helicopter skids scraped the left side of the boat before the helicopter nosedived into the water. Mitchell cowered as far as he could down when the tail rotor passed overhead and ripped apart the seat he'd been sitting on moments before. Mitch stood up to look at the wreckage, then heard a huge crack and was thrown forward by a jerk. He ducked down, then realized that it was the sound of the anchor rope tearing the anchor cleat from the stern. He looked at the wreckage behind him. He could see a rage-filled face with bloodshot eyes pounding his fist and face against the glass cockpit bubble. How could the man even smell him? Mitchell was confused. He had no idea how it was possible for the man in the chopper to have got his scent through all the downdraft. Off to his right, a Marine Patrol boat was pulling alongside him. A man on a bullhorn shouted at him to shut down his engine. Mitch picked the radio microphone he dropped when he heard the helicopter coming at him up.
I've already told you to keep your distance. No boats and no more goddamn helicopters.
A voice came over the emergency channel.
Mr. Roberts, if you stop your boat, we can negotiate.
Mitch looked at the two Marine Patrol boats on either side of him, trying to keep him boxed in.
I don't see any protective gear on anyone around me. Didn't you guys learn anything today?
We'll put the boats back if you slow them down, said the voice.
Every time I slow down, people try to kill me. I've told you what I need for your sake and mine.
We're considering it.
Mitchell knew it was a waiting game. Sooner or later, they'd try to use a high-powered rifle to take out the engine or just wait for him to run out of gas. After that, he'd be metaphorically and possibly literally dead in the water. He needed something to bargain with. He could threaten to kill himself, but he wasn't sure if they'd take him seriously, having realized he'd had an escape plan the last time he said he would do that. Mitchell thought about it for a moment. He was still an unpredictable element to them. There was something to creating a bluff that they'd be afraid to call him on.
He also knew that he had the public watching what was happening. Mitch looked down and saw one of the spent flare guns. He picked it up and slid it into the zipper of his diving suit. "Let me ask you a question. Do you believe me now that there's something medically going on with me that's making people attack me?" he asked into the microphone.
"We don't know what to believe. If you stop your vessel, we can talk about it."
"That's not a helpful answer. I've already told you what I need in order for me to stop this boat." Mitchell looked up to his left and saw the orange and white colors of the Coast Guard helicopter. He remembered how they'd stop go-fast boats like his. "If anybody else shoots at me today," the voice interrupted.
"No one shot at you today."
"Did I just imagine gunfire on the bridge? Is this bullet hole in my suit a hallucination?"
"The bridge was unfortunate."
Mitchell was shocked at how hard it was to get through to these people. "Yes, it was unfortunate. Unfortunate because it was your fault."
"We're going to handle things differently. Please power down your vessel."
"Here's what I'm going to do. You do the simple thing I asked for, which quite honestly is not asking for much, and is just as much for your safety as mine. Then you will have my surrender when I think it's safe." Mitch held up the flare gun. "You guys insist on handling this wrong and doing something like trying to shoot my engine or me on live television, I'm going to straddle the gas tank on this boat and shoot a flare gun into the leak the helicopter made."
"Mr. Roberts," the voice interrupted,
"I'm not finished. Here's the best part. The explosion that's going to send me into a billion tiny little parts all over the Intracoastal, maybe nothing will happen. Maybe everyone around for 100 miles will get a little breath of Mad Mitch. Maybe I'm not the suicidal type, like the last guy said. But I know I'd rather go out by my own hand than yours. I've told you what I want." There was a long pause. Finally, the voice came back on.
"All right, Mr. Roberts, just let us have your assurance that you won't try to hurt anyone."
"I'm not the one who needs to make that promise, but I will. I've acted as open and ethically as I could. I beg you to do the same."
"Agreed."
The naked man in the forest was in a different place. He didn't know where to look for the face of the Earth Mother. The trees and the plants were different. This was not his familiar spot. Of course, it was all part of the Earth Mother. He just needed to be able to see that. He dropped a half tab of blotter and waited. He jerked his head to the side when something scurried through the brush. He hoped it was the Earth Mother. Instead, it was just an armadillo. Just an armadillo. He felt shame for denigrating one of her creatures. It was a thing of light, not a thing of dark like him. The naked man in the forest scratched a huge welt into his leg for thinking that he was special. He looked down at the red mass of his testicles and penis. Hadn't he learned his lesson already from the poison ivy? This time it was going to be worse. He'd failed the Earth Mother. For the first time, he feared her eggs might be in real danger. He'd come far away for them, and he wasn't able to protect them. All because of that damned man. That horrible man, shrouded in darkness. Because of him, he was sure the Earth Mother was going to make him pay. Wind blew through the clearing, and the naked man felt the cold breeze on his back. She was there. She wasn't showing herself. This was bad.
"Earth Mother," he pleaded. I'll do anything you ask. Anything."
"I know, my child." Her voice was sweet. He began to turn his head to look behind him where the voice came from. "Do not turn around." Words came out like thunderclaps. The naked man in the forest froze. "The eggs. Protect my eggs." Her voice was sweet again. "Why can't I see you right now, Earth Mother?" he began to wail. "I don't want you to see how angry I am with you right now. I don't want you to see my face and forget that I ever loved you."
"Loved? What can I do, Earth Mother?"
"Are my eggs ready?"
"Yes, Earth Mother. They've been ready.
Then go to them. Stop this man if you can, but go to my eggs. I may have you bring them to him.
Bring them to this man? I don't understand.
The entire forest shook with her fury. Tree limbs snapped, and a cold wind stirred up a tornado of dead leaves. Don't question what I ask of you! The naked man in the forest buried his face in his hands. When you came to me, you were lost. You were confused about the things you did. You didn't understand what was light and what was dark. Who showed you?
You did, Earth Mother,
he whimpered.
Who told you what to say? Who told you what to do? Who told you about my eggs? You, Earth Mother, everything I owe to you.
Then, if I tell you to bring my eggs to this man, then that is what you will do.
Yes, Earth Mother, yes.
He felt her presence leave the clearing. He sat alone, naked.
Loved, she had said. She said she had loved him, in the past tense.
All because of this horrible man. He put on the other self's clothes. He would do what she asked. He'd try to bring the eggs to this man, but she hadn't said anything about trying to stop him before then. She would love him again. She would love him when she saw that the eggs were his responsibility, that he, the naked man in the forest, not the horrible man or his other self, was the one to see that they were hatched. He heard a twig snap behind him as he put one leg in the other self's pants. He turned his head and saw an athletic man with a cut-off shorts and tank top whistling at him. The naked man in the forest froze. He'd never been caught changing back into the other self.
Don't waste time. I like that.
The naked man in the forest tried to focus on the man's face, but the acid was making his goatee stretch and distort into a beard. He just smiled back. The man walked towards him.
So, what's your thing?
The naked man in the forest looked around the clearing.
Over here. He pointed to a log. Sit here and watch.
The man sat down on the log and looked up at him.
All right, now what?
Close your eyes. The man looked up at him skeptically.
Just close your eyes. Let me get something out of my wallet.
The man closed his eyes. The naked man in the forest leaned down to his pants and grabbed a large rock.
This better not get...
The man's words were cut off when he was struck in the temple. He struggled to get up, but the naked man in the forest hit him again and again until his skull cracked open and blood poured into the ground. For a moment, the man's face changed into the face of the hunted man on the television, but the naked man from the forest knew that was just wishful thinking.
This is an audiobook presentation of Public Enemy Zero by Andrew Main. Public Enemy Zero is available for only $1 at the Amazon Kindle store or via the Kindle app on all major tablets and smartphones, including iPads, iPhones, Blackberries, Windows 7, and Android. It's also available on the Barnes & Noble Nook store and Apple's iBooks. Or you can get a complete, uninterrupted copy of this audiobook at andrewmain.com/books.